last week. So if you want to go ahead, Terry. So when you talk about carbon, you hear carbon in the news, what do you generally associate with it? Carbon credits. You know, we're going to save the world. We're going to take all the CO2 out of the atmosphere. And the younger generation wants to pay for all this. So in the past, we've always talked about doing carbon credits or carbon offsets. So where a farmer makes a change, he gets paid for that change. Working with a group like Indigo or Truterra, you know, they might sell that credit to, say, a Pepsi or a Bayer or one of those companies. But in the last year, 18 months, there's some options that have come available courtesy of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed in Congress in summer of 22. And some of those things we're going to talk about. There's currently a tax credit called 45Q that is available. Starting in 25, there'll be another tax credit available called 45Z. There's another tax credit available called 179D. That is a energy efficiency tax credit that you can also get out of the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's a lot of other things coming besides just doing the carbon credit, which most of us know what they pay you is probably a fifth of what you need to do the practice that they want you to do. So it's generally been a losing bet when we've been trying to do them. So a little bit about my background. I'm from Wisner, born and raised, grew up there, attended Wisner Pilger. First time around, decided to go to UNK, got my bachelor's degree in agronomy, soil biology. Came back to work, worked for a large feedlot west of Wisner. Also had a large farm operation. Went back to UNL. I have a master's in soil fertility with an emphasis in soil science. So dealing with the soils and some of the issues as far as the science part of this is a little easier for me because of my background. And we also are a crop consulting company. Next slide, Terry. So Environmental Sciences is the company I work for and help found. We're founded in Wisner. If you look, we're involved in environmental compliance, crop consulting, precision ag. We're involved in surveying, designing, and livestock operations. We work with poultry, cattle, and dairy producers, as well as some large food processors like Wells Blue Bunny would be a client of ours, Cargill. We do different things for. The other thing a couple years ago we become involved in is if you want to be paid for a carbon offset, that has to be verified by an approved third party. When we have our credentials done, we'll be one of 10 in the country that can approve that. So even if you're doing a carbon offset, we have the wherewithal in our office to be able to get that approved. And then our website has a lot of our information on, if you want to take a look at that, www.esiagconsulting.com. So the first thing we usually do when we talk about this is we gotta make sure we all agree about the terms we talk about. So a term that gets tossed around a lot is a carbon offset. So by definition in the Oxford Dictionary, it's an action where you're intended to be compensated. So now generally what happens is a farmer will be approached, he'll make a change, he'll generate an offset. An offset is equal to 1 metric ton of CO2 equivalents. Right now, when we talk about carbon credits, we talk about CO2 equivalents. When we talk about carbon sequestration, we're only talking about dealing with carbon dioxide, so that's a big difference. CO2 equivalent also takes into consideration emissions from methane and nitrous oxide. When we look at studying or being paid for sequestering carbon dioxide, that's the only molecule in consideration. So you're not paid to sequester anything else except for carbon dioxide or carbon oxide. So the other term that gets a lot of companies have announced is they're going to, by 2030, be carbon neutral. So they know what they're going to emit as far as an industry or facility. They're going to buy enough offsets. So by doing a math equation, that they're neutral. So they would say they're not contributing to any impact of climate change. And for the younger generation, that's kind of the term everybody wants. Then the other term that comes up a lot is what we call carbon net zero. If you want to be a net zero company, generally what that means is you have to build a whole new facility that by itself has no emissions. And the best example I know of that is Tesla. So Tesla built a new car manufacturing plant. So they generate carbon offsets. Does anybody have a guess in a year what they get for their carbon offsets, dollars wise? Any guesses? Closer to two. For not even making a car, just the way they built the building. So that's what makes some of these things kind of interesting when you start to look at the scope or the size of things. So the other thing that comes into consideration when we talk about global climate change or climate change is we have to talk about global warming potential. So when we look at climate change, we talk about three molecules. We talk about carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. If you look at which one's the worst for the environment, so carbon dioxide has a score of one. So it's the least harmful to the environment. Methane is 25 times more impactful to the environment than carbon dioxide is. Nitrous oxide is 298 times more. So I've always been confused why we don't worry more about nitrous oxide than carbon dioxide. The other thing that's interesting is, does anybody know how many parts per million of CO2 we have in the atmosphere? Yeah, it's about 400 parts per million, 0.004. Anybody knows what happens when it gets to 0.002? Yep, plant life dies. So it's real interesting when people talking about really wanting to sequester this and impact carbon dioxide, because right now that's one of the smallest molecule concentrations we have in the atmosphere. But yet that's what everybody is throwing money at. So now we just got to see if the money is true and it's good and everybody wants to offer it, if people in this part of the state don't step up and get it, somebody else will. And we work on projects all over the country. I've been invited several places around the world to do these kind of things. So the money is all over. Corporations are spending billions of dollars. Now the question is, what are the options we have to do the next step? So in the past, companies have come out. I always like this one myself. So we have a major feed company in the United States called Cargill. Thinks that we should put masks on cows to reduce methane emissions. Actually, 90% comes out of the front end. No, front end. Yep, front end is actually where it comes from. So even congressional folks have it bad saying it comes out of the back end. It's actually the front end. That mask costs $75 for a year. They can do it in Europe because England pays producers to do it. That's the only reason it works in England. It's fairly subsidized. The one on the left is a feed additive you can add, a gram per head if you have a 1,000-pound animal. That reduces methane emissions 11%. And there's some other products that are out. Some are made of seaweed that offer the same thing. As far as the feed additive, and we'll talk about this later, Elanco is a company that has released two feed products that reduce methane, that using that product and going through a different platform, you can be paid by a company called Antheon to reduce emissions. Right now, that's only working in the dairy industry. Excuse me a minute, I need to take a drink. Have tried to do a carbon credit, just for curiosity. Has anybody met with an Indigo or a Truterra, or did it work out good for you? Okay. Yeah, so it's a geologic deposit. They'll use a big well casing and just shove it in the ground and let it be stored. So the other thing that happened about a year ago, there was an SEC rule that was proposed that said if you're traded on the Federal Stock Exchange, you have to quarterly submit your emissions to the SEC. And if you didn't do that, you couldn't be traded. What they quickly learned is when you start looking at emissions for a manufacturer, scope one is a pretty small percentage. You know, it talks about direct emissions originating from the facility itself. That's maybe 5% of the total of emissions from that facility. You'll get another 5% from where you buy energy from or where you buy steam. 90% of the emissions we deal with are the raw ingredients. So if you're, say, Wells, you get your raw ingredient from a dairy, that SEC rule meant that you would have to go all the way back to the dairy, find every emission that they do from the dairy itself and where then they buy feed, and all report that to the federal government. So things quickly got out of hand as to who's going to participate in these things. So that's kind of where we have been. There's some new things coming in the future that, one, will pay a lot better, that don't have contracts. And for me, the contract thing was always kind of an issue and the fees that went with it for the clients we deal with. So what we're going to talk about today is a little bit is what's called a carbon intensity score. Right now, the score is a standard 29.1 score. Starting in 25, that score is going to be lowered based on how you farm and the energy it takes you to raise that grain. The lower that score is, the bigger the premium the ethanol plant will give you because that will produce a better gallon of ethanol that they market. So that's going to be passed down through a tax credit called 45Z. The other thing that's new is called a carbon inset. I learned about it last December. And that's where you feed a feed product, and that reduction travels with the product to the processor, and he can claim it. And then the other thing we're talking about is what we're working on now, which is called carbon oxide or carbon dioxide sequestration. This is done through what's called a 45Q tax credit. This was all part of the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. When we talk about sequestration, we can do it two different ways. The big companies like Chevron are actually doing direct air capture. The way farmers and ranchers can do it is just by letting their crops grow and harvesting residue via photosynthesis and using photosynthesis as a natural sequestration avenue. So let's first talk about the carbon intensity score. So currently, an intensity score is defined as feedstocks used for biofuel production, which are measured for energy used to produce the grain. So when we do a carbon credit, we talk about a million grams of GHG gases per acre or per field. What a carbon intensity score does is set it those grams of GHG gases for every bushel, or every megajoule of energy you produce. So there's standard calculations we can do. Right now, the score is 29.1. So when an ethanol plant sells its ethanol, its score is just 29.1, and it doesn't matter. But there are companies and other folks have proposed that we go to a CI score that fluctuates based on the energy a farmer uses to produce his grain. And by recording them activities, you can calculate that. And if you get below, say, 20, you might get a dollar and a half bushel more for your grain. So the CI score thing will change starting in January 1 at 25. So we're still kind of waiting to see what the rules are for it. Right now, the issue is we don't have regulations from the IRS on how to calculate these or what we need to do to submit them. So we're kind of still waiting. But that's kind of one of the new options farmers, especially corn and soybean farmers, will have to begin in later this summer and actually being paid in 25 is when the program starts. It's set to be a 3-year program. So the next thing we get to talk about is a carbon inset. So we've talked about carbon offsets. Now we're going to talk about an inset. So the way it works is a producer, generally this has worked in the dairy industry, like I said before. So Elanco has a product, we'll feed the dairy cows, that'll reduce the methane emission. And then the processor I deal with, which is Nestle, pays the farmer to use that. And the trading platform is hosted by a company called Anthian. So then the company can claim that that milk was produced by a more sustainable animal or in a more sustainable environment. So that becomes their advertising ploy. Right now, I've only seen it work in the dairy industry. So it's pretty limited as far as what can be applied to. So the one we're currently involved in and that we're doing the most stuff with is called the CO2 sequestration. Since I was sick last week, guys, I'm going to sit down here for a minute before I fall down. So when we talk about doing these things, so carbon dioxide sequestration, which is tax credit 45Q, that was funded through 2033, and that is a part of the Inflation Reduction Act. Right now, there sits about $390 billion to be spent for these tax credits from the government. You apply for a 45Q tax credit. So a couple examples of carbon sequestration is if you directly draw CO2 out of the atmosphere, like with a vacuum, which is direct air capture, or you allow a plant to do photosynthesis where it takes in CO2 and creates oxygen and glucose. So both of those are acceptable operations in the eyes of the IRS or the Department of Energy. So the one that seems to get the most press is what's called direct air capture. So this is what all the big companies are going to do because they think it can save the planet. So the way this works is they'll set up a large vacuum and they'll draw CO2 out of the atmosphere. And then they'll heat that receptive liquid to it or semi-solid to it so that CO2 adheres to that solid or semi-solid. And right now we're using potassium hydroxide to complete that reaction. So then they'll put that on a truck as a liquid, or it may have went in some of the pipelines that are proposed. So, but in order to split that molecule, you have to heat that liquid to 900 degrees. So then it becomes very energy intensive, and you spend more money on energy and water than you do sequestering CO2. So it's a little hard to believe that that's going to save us. For a small plant that does this, they're going to use about 50 million gallons of water a year to take that heat and convert it to steam. So in an area of the country where we're kind of limited at water because of the drought we've had the last few years, and the fact that these things cost millions of dollars or billions of dollars, right now it isn't a real viable option. The other option we have is as simple as photosynthesis. We all learned about it in high school. Plant uses light energy and water, carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, produces glucose, which is a sugar that'll convert, and then it'll create oxygen, and it'll sequester that carbon dioxide. And that carbon dioxide will go into different products like lignin or cellulose or hemicellulose, which are compounds that don't readily degrade. So it can stay there a multiple number of years and be considered securely stored. But before we get that far, we got to talk a little bit about some biology. So we have some C3 and C4 plants. So a C3 plant, like rice or soybeans, so when it goes through photosynthesis, it creates a 3-carbon sugar, a very short chain. And it has a very limited photosynthetic potential. But on the other hand, if you look at a C4 plant like corn or sorghum, it uses what's called a 4-chain. It has twice the photosynthetic potential as a C3 crop. So right now there's plant engineering looking at moving that Kelvin cycle from a C4 plant to a C3 plant to make that plant be able to produce more energy itself. So like I said before, plants produce things like lignin cellulose and hemicellulose. So we can actually, in a lab, test for all those things. So if you can tell me your yield, like in a corn situation, for every bushel of corn you produce about 47 pounds of plant residue. So if you know your yield and you know how much plant residue you produced, you can calculate pretty simply based on analysis how much of those you sequestered. And we can convert that to carbon dioxide. But not only do you get credit for what's sequestered in the plant, but you also get credit for what's sequestered in the soil. So soil is the largest repository for carbon on the planet. So there's always a conversion from soil organic matter to soil carbon going on in soil. So we can test soil for soil organic carbon. So without a farmer doing anything but just operating normal, he'll sequester about 7/10 of a ton of CO2 annually without doing anything. So if you look on what the government's paying now, that's about $60 an acre for not even doing anything. So we're doing this with grass, alfalfa, millet, corn, soybeans, rye, about any crop we can think of. We're doing grasses, cool season, warm season. We have some projects in the Mississippi Delta to do rice. So any plant that uses photosynthesis sequesters carbon dioxide. So that's what makes it nice and an option to do, because you don't have to change anything. You don't have to put a cover crop on for $50 an acre and get paid 5 or 10. You don't have to have a 5-year contract with an entity. You can do this year in, year out until 2033 if you want to or not. If you put manure on a piece of ground, you sequester even more, because manure will have lignin, hemicellulose, and cellulose in it. So the more manure you put on it, that's another dose of CO2 you just sequestered. So we look at all kinds of those records to have an idea what people are sequestering. So if you look at the last one, the biggest hang up with this is to qualify, you need to sequester 12,500 tons, metric tons of CO2 annually. So if you're a row crop farmer, that takes about 4,000 acres. But the nice thing about a CO2 metric ton is they're transferable. So you could actually sign just a transfer piece of paper to an entity, pool them, and then submit them. That's what we're doing with farmers from 400 acres to 2,000 acres to get them to qualify to be eligible. And then once that entity is paid, that money is redispersed minus fees, the accounts getting those kind of things. But that's generally how we're involving the smaller producer that would miss out on this. Yes, sir. That makes a whole more. Right now, you're better off excluding the trees and taking your grass in this program. So what we can do using GIS, we can eliminate those acres that have those trees. It makes the sequestration calculation a lot simpler, and you're better off based on what the grass sequesters over time and the soil sequesters over time than what you get from the tree. Yes. That's just the way the program is built. You know, when you look at carbon credits, yeah, then you look at calculating trees and looking at tree diameters and lifespans and calculating how much CO2 is in that tree. In this program, it's a lot simpler to exclude them and use what the grass and the soil provide us instead of that tree. Just make stuff on our end a little simpler. I can't just do a generic number. I have to do it by every tree. That's the reason they get cut out. If we could do it a generic number and have a generic forestation value for that area, that'd be different. But in order to justify that, you have to do each tree. That's where the problem and the rub becomes. So like I said, the problem has been the 12,500 ton. Yes, we have clients that can do that by themselves, and we have clients that we've pooled together to reach that number. So let's talk about the vehicle we use to do this. It's called 45Q. This was part of the Inflation Reduction Act. So the regulations were published in the Federal Register in January of 2021. So this program has always been in use prior. Program's been around since probably the 1980s. But before last year, you would have to sequester 100,000 ton. So they lowered it and added language so it become more accessible to more people. When I met with some of the authors, the Inflation Reduction Act in Washington, they want agriculture involved in the answer, and they thought this was one option we had to get it that way, is to use photosynthesis versus the big mechanical option to sequester carbon dioxide. So it's done on an annual basis, and there's no contract. A lot of the carbon credits you do are on a five-year contract. So when you look at doing this vehicle, there's two pieces you have to qualify. One is the use of a qualified carbon oxide, which they define for you, and then a specific utilization of that carbon oxide that is required. And photosynthesis, that we'll look at here in a bit, is an accepted option. So how it works is you as a producer would approach us. We would look at your previous 3 years of farm history, get all your activities, your yields, grazing, if you're baling corn stalks, cutting silage, seeding rye. So we can actually calculate on average what your emissions are annually. And then in addition to the emissions we calculate on an annual basis, we calculate how much CO2 you sequester based on the soil and the plants and any manures you would apply. So what you actually end up submitting to the federal government is a net sequestration. So as an operation, you would be considered carbon neutral in the eyes of the IRS. Doesn't gain you anything, but we take the most conservative value to submit it to the IRS. So then what we would do is have you provide your 23 crop data. As far as activities, yields, most of the yield data we get are from crop insurance companies, and we can calculate that same net CO2 sequestration on an annual basis. And right now, the 23 sequestration CO2 is valued at $85 a metric ton. It goes up each year as inflation goes up. Next year, it'll probably be worth about $95 a ton. And you can do this 1 year at a time. And according to the accountants I deal with, you can actually go back 3 years and amend your taxes to look at CO2 sequestration in the past. The problem we have with that is the value of the CO2 is only in that $20 to $25 a ton range. So you get about a fourth of the money. So then you have to weigh whether it's worth the option of opening it up, potentially being audited, depending on how in the gray area your accountant was when you did it. So what we talked about before was qualified carbon oxide is one of the requirements. So this actually comes out of federal law, so this was published twice in the Federal Register. First time received comments, second time was what the final law would be. So this is a document we have to follow. So if you look at the definition of qualified carbon oxide, if you look at II, would otherwise be released in the atmosphere as an industrial emission of greenhouse gas. The nice thing about the federal government, they never defined industrial. So it's any release that would go into the atmosphere. I've had a couple law firms make sure I was right. But yeah, the word industrial is not defined in law. So it doesn't have to be a manufacturing plant, doesn't have to be a concrete plant, fertilizer plant. It's just anything that is released into the atmosphere. The other option we have is III, is we can actually measure the source of the carbon dioxide when we capture it and utilize it, because you can calculate from CO2 backwards to get how much carbon you actually sequestered. So the other side of this to qualify is what's called utilization. So if you look at A, for purposes of this section, look at number one. Fixation of such qualified carbon dioxide through photosynthesis or chemosynthesis. That is the loophole that we've approached with the U.S. Department of Energy and the U.S. Treasury, where you don't have to be a mechanical facility. They actually spelled out that photosynthesis, if you can sequester enough, which would be the 12,500 metric ton, you can qualify to participate in this program. So the other thing you can look at is where you look at it being to a material. So in Nebraska, we're fortunate because we have a market for corn stalks, whether it's livestock feed or some cellulosic ethanol facilities like at Ravenna. So we actually have a market for that compound. So that would be the other way we could actually qualify for this, is that we actually meet the definitions that they specify. So with that, I'll kind of end. I'm going to take a drink of water here. Glad to take any questions. I went through it kind of quick. So if somebody wanted to leave because of the weather, we could. Questions?